Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 37, Renaissance, Part 2. Now, the consciousness soul is the third of these seeds, these time capsules, planted in us by the spiritual world. It's the last. It's three of three, and it arose in the early 15th century. Because the 15th century was a time where documentation was beginning, where individuals were starting to write more about the world, about their own observations, even about themselves, we have here the clearest record of a soul capacity beginning to unfold, not just in a vague way in humanity in general, though we see evidence of that, but in very specific individuals who, as it were, wake up one morning and begin to realize something is brewing within me, something is awakening within me that is allowing me or compelling me to see the world differently than those around me. So this is quite remarkable. What we only find in the myths of ancient times, the stories of these exceptional individuals who think that they are one thing and learn later that they have a very particular world mission, now this sort of feeling begins to arise in actual individuals. And why is it so well documented? Why are individuals able to speak about the unfolding of this soul force as they were not able to describe the sentient soul or the intellectual soul? It is because the whole point of the consciousness soul is that it awakens self-consciousness. Now, just to describe it again in similar terms to that of sentient and intellectual soul, the consciousness soul is where the astral body awakens in the physical body itself. And that means that we are not only going to continue the life of the senses that the sentient soul gave us as a gift from the spiritual world, not only are we going to be able to continue the capacity to think about this world, to understand it and to bring a degree of organization in our thoughts, like Aristotle's great philosophical books or Plato's dialogues, we are also going to be able to focus the life of the senses, the life of thought, on ourselves as physical beings living on the earth. So not only is there interest in the physical world, as was the case of the physicists of ancient Greece, there's also going to be great interest in the physicality of the human body. So it will be no surprise to us that for the first time since ancient times, the physical body is again unveiled and revealed in its unclothed form, but with a degree of accuracy, a degree of perfection that even the most skilled of the ancient artists could not attain. So here we see signs of its arising. What is also remarkable here is that Rudolf Steiner actually gives a year, I don't know if he gave a month, maybe he did, to the beginning, to the clarion call, the first shot of the consciousness soul being born, and he says it's 1413, and he says that the outer sign was, and this is always so interesting, not a new revelation of spiritual beings, not a war, not a book of philosophy, though all of these things came about around about this time, but Steiner points to the discovery of, the formulation of, the laws of perspective. And we will see very soon in biographies how and when this came about. The laws of perspective. Why that? Why does that lead to the birth or show that the consciousness soul is being born? We'll have ample opportunity to discuss this further. But I think this is a very intriguing question. And I would say to you, dear colleagues, this shows why you really want to teach perspective drawing well. You know, and to do as good a job as you possibly can. And I can't say that in many schools that I visit, looking at the seventh grade perspective drawings that are in the hall, that is to say the ones of which the teacher is clearly most proud, 9 out of 10 times, it's not being taught all that well. I mean, the children are kind of learning what perspective is and how to make something look three-dimensional. That's only a small part of it. It's clear from the drawings they are not being taken back to that experience of discovery, of revelation, in which a light goes off and it is the light of the consciousness soul. Now, to go back again to keep it in order with the way I've been talking about the other soul forces, when did this come into being? How old were people? Generally, it's after age 35. So this is really a midlife phenomenon. After age 35, the consciousness soul will, as it were, automatically arise in people. But when you live in a given age, and this was true of the Greeks with the intellectual soul, and it's true of us because the consciousness soul has now been around almost exactly 600 years. Remarkable to think about that. So it surrounds us. It's in everything. It permeates our lives. So that means that even children in your class who are about to now incorporate their astral body, that astral body's already going to be bringing consciousness, soul, forces, and capacities to them on a very dull level. But sometimes it arises and it's as though you're speaking to someone who's 35 or 40, worldly wise and so aware and awake. And then, of course, you can't take it too seriously because it dissolves and they go back to being 14-year-olds, 13, 14-year-olds again. So, but it's important to realize how strongly, because it is connected with our physical body, because it is anchored very, very much in the material nature, the substantiality of our world, the consciousness soul is the most powerful of the three forces. And the consciousness soul is the last to be implanted. That is to say, after this, everything that we attain in the way of further soul and spiritual development, we have to do the job. It's another classic case of God giving us the nuts, but not cracking them for us. Now it's our task to do this. So what are some of the salient features of the consciousness soul? Number one, it completely subsumes all of the gifts and capacities that the sentient soul has brought to us, that the intellectual soul has brought to us, but what it does further is to cause us to awaken more than anything else to our own being, to our own sense as an individuality, to develop a capacity to understand that though we are part of the commonality of humanity, we are also unique. We are also individuals. And it means then that we will spend more time than peoples in the past ever had to do in trying to figure out, who am I? What am I here for? What is my task on the earth? Now, what's wonderful about this, and we see this how quickly, right away in the Renaissance time, that we see individualities appearing unlike any who've ever appeared on the earth before, who are almost godlike in their apprehension of themselves, who feel, I can do anything and I will. I can attain this. I can achieve that. I will explore on my own this new path. Remarkable what comes there, not surprising. It coincides with the age of exploration. It coincides with the birth of natural science, because we now look at the world less and less from the viewpoint of others and more from a singular viewpoint, our own unique viewpoint. This means that we become increasingly like observers in the world, and the figure of Hamlet retains such unique and universal fascination for us these hundreds of years later after its composition, because Hamlet embodies this consciousness soul. Awake, conscious, an observer, an astute observer, one who understands deeply all that is around, one who is asking, what is my task in the world? But here's another salient quality of the consciousness soul. Because it is so imbued with thinking, it also slows us down. It also can even paralyze us when it comes to action. So the great strength of the consciousness soul is the enhancement of the life of thinking. The great weakness is in the will. One can have very great and grand thoughts, and in one's will, one may be acting on automatic pilot or not acting at all. And we'll see this interplay, this struggle of the thinking and the will and the feeling trying to mediate in between. Another salient, important aspect of the consciousness soul age is that because of this separating out of the soul, spirit, and physical aspects of the human being, that people can compartmentalize their lives. They can be wonderful, almost angelic in one area, and horrendous and cruel in another. And in fact, Steiner says that when you start to write compositions in the seventh and eighth grade about various individuals, it's not bad to try to see them from two diametrically different points of view, to see the opposites that live within them, sometimes harmoniously brought together, at other times like two wild horses pulling a wagon, running in completely oppositional directions. So this is important, and this is going to begin to arise as the astral body comes to your students. This oppositional quality within. What is the great mental illness of our time? What in the 20th century was called schizophrenia, which tends to be spoken of now more as bipolar disorder. Bipolar. Two poles, equal and opposite in strength, pulling a person apart. Schizophrenia, a split between one aspect of the person and the other. So much of the mental illness of our time is a shadow of what the consciousness soul brings as a strength, and yet to develop the strength to be able to pull these two horses and have them running alongside one another, what power that gives one. What horsepower, as they say, but it's got to be channeled, it's got to be harnessed. And we'll see this again in the interplay of the political and artistic life of the Renaissance as we look at various figures. And of course, and here again we see why seventh grade is such a crucial year for the students, we are living in the consciousness soul. When we learned about ancient cultures in grade 5, we were learning about people whose consciousness was far removed from our own. when we learned about the Greeks and the Romans, particularly the Romans in grade 6, we were learning about people to whom we could relate much more, but whose consciousness was still a step away from our own. And we could relate to them because we had been there. We probably had gone through those consciousness experiences of the mind-soul. Now we come to something that on the one hand is brand new to us, on the other hand, we're in it. So it's like teaching fish about water. They're in it. They don't know that's water in which they swim. The consciousness soul is what we live and breathe today. So this is quite a challenge to teach it as something historical and yet to give the children a sense this is yet to come in your lives. You're living in it, but you're not yet awake to it. I'm preparing you for your mid-30s. I'm preparing you for the onset of something that will really make you a modern person. Now, this is not to say that everybody is acting out of the consciousness soul by any means. In fact, in our time, one of the great problems is how strong the influence of the intellectual mind soul remains. It's no longer the appropriate way to look at the world or to act in the world. And this is one of the great problems we have. It informs so much of the conflicts in the intellectual life, in the academic life today. And we might say that the sentient soul still lives very powerfully in certain parts of the world. And we see this in the warfare that is such a prevalent part of our life as well, where you have sentient soul cultures battling against intellectual soul cultures who in turn are trying to be transformed and made peaceful and placid by consciousness soul forces. So it gives us a very different picture of the nature of conflict in our world. It's not like you could just talk to everybody out of the consciousness soul and have them make nice to one another. We are working with very different levels of consciousness, sometimes all three at once, sometimes one or two, but the consciousness soul must act to subsume them, to raise them all to a higher level in which one can really have a new consciousness born out of the spirit. We'll go on with yet another aspect of the Renaissance.